This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Hey, man. Hey, fellas.
Yes, sir.
I'm talking. You remember that, that funky time with our heads? Oh, yeah. I mean, man, it was a real funky time. Let me tell you. I fuck master. I number one top ranking. They keep being gritty in the bass, be stacking. Crowd so wild, I think the mic feedback. And tambourine pie, animated track, be banging. Funky like a chain reaction. I'm forever in the groove and the funk keeps slamming.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Lookout Landing Podcast. After nearly a month in various parts of the country, various states of mind.
Such a long time.
Your favorite podcast is back. I am Matthew Robertson. I'm joined by my friends, my fellow bar patrons, my nacho eaters. To my right is Kate Preusser. How's it going, Kate?
Thanks for waiting until I put a chip in my mouth.
Of course. Yeah, I'm a professional.
Yes, I'm crunching some nachos, so if you hear crunchy sounds, that's what that noise is.
It is that.
It's not me crunching up the bones of Mariners prospects past, which is what we've been doing on the site this week.
That's true. We've
reviewed the bone heap that is left from the 2013 on draft. It's been rough, and it's largely been the job of John Troop and John.
You know it. Nothing I love more than crunching some bones, crunching some numbers, also crunching Frontier Airlines into dust.
Drag them.
Drag them.
Do you want to clue in the listeners as to your airline experience?
Happily. I mean, anyone who has flown, I think, sort of the Frontier Spirit Airlines sort of genre. I'm sure there are some other ones in there.
Yeah,
that I'm
the
not
Sharknado
remembering.
Of airlines. Yeah. That's the genre.
Essentially, the long and short of it is I was supposed to be back on Tuesday. Plane got delayed. It was informed three different times that there were different times that I could actually fly. Ultimately, had to get moved to Sunday, which even that I was only able to do because in the interim of trying to figure it out, they had filled up the entirety of the hotels that they had and were going to be unable to fill a hotel for me. So they were happy to just get me a different flight. But so just spent more time than expected in Cooperstown, New York, watching ultimately several retired Mariners, including Corey Hart,
yeah.
Jack Wilson, and Ryan Roland Smith.
Yeah. Mount Rushmore, Mariners player.
Yeah, get active on the diamond.
Corey Hart being old enough to play in like a Hall of Fame type game.
Yeah.
Makes me feel unbelievably old because.
See, but he also always moved.
He was just a Mariner.
He was just a Mariner. Like, it was 2014.
I hated him. I hated watching him.
But he also looked
a lot.
Like when he was playing for the Mariners, he looked old enough. Like the way he moved his locomotion was that of like someone whose limbs sort of had to send like individual brain
and it was
signals
via semaphore.
Yeah,
the tube. He actually had a series of
tubes.
Exactly.
He definitely makes Jay Bruce look like one of those UCLA gymnasts. Just
absolutely exactly.
The funny part is too. Corey Hart was signed as like an actual guy. Like he was supposed to be like the DH who would hit 30 homers and add some power to
Nelson
the lineup.
Cruz.
Yeah, exactly. Like Ricky Weeks was that year, who was the same year, was like, oh shit, like last moment we gotta pull someone in. But like Corey Hart was playing it.
Corey Hart was exactly. So luckily we're not quite at the Corey Hart part of this season, although I guess we have some Corey Hart cosplayers in a way.
Yeah, definitely.
People who
definitely
are trying their damnedest.
Some Corey
to
Hart cover bands.
Yeah, exactly.
It is pretty straight, unwatchable baseball. We are recording this. It's Wednesday, the Mariners have just dropped a series to Texas. They suffered one really bad loss today, not so bad, but still.
You're run-of-the-mill. The type of loss we were promised this year, right?
Yes, the bullpen blows it loss.
The offense does a lot, the defense does a little. The pitching does a bad, and you get this, so, yeah.
And that's amore.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, where are you on the Mariners? I know we're probably all at different attention levels here, different, probably, mindsets when we are watching a game. I feel like we all probably have different things that we're looking for.
Some of us are contractually obligated to watch the Mariners a little more carefully than others.
For that, we thank you, Vox Media and Kate, for doing that so that I don't have to.
On my sword!
Yeah, because I'll speak for myself, personally. I really have not been watching. I'll watch if I'm recapping, because you people deserve great content, and when I just have nothing to do. So, like, what was it? Monday night, when Vogelbach hit the home run to the upper deck, I was watching that out of pure happenstance. Like, oh, the Mariners are on. I turned it on in, like, the sixth inning, and that's kind of where I am with the team. I'm not, like, making time to watch the games ever anymore, which I feel kind of bad about, but also, like, I value my own happiness and sanity, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Also, you are still contractually obligated to watch some of
them. Yes. So. Correct. Which I have been doing. It's not like I'm completely ignoring them. I'm just saying
This is Matthew's quarterly interview.
Yeah.
Sprung on him.
Yeah. Anthony Bass, I know all about him. Yes,
yeah,
of course.
This turns out to be your performance review. Mm-hmm. I think it's fine to engage with the team at whatever level you can right now. They are playing baseball that is anywhere from like mediocre to bad to straight up unwatchable. And
right.
Yeah. The problem is you never know what you're gonna get. Like you can tune in and Vogelbach could be hitting one to the upper tank and that's fun and it really rewards you for watching. But most of the time it's gonna be bad. So John, I know that my strategy is to totally disengage. Like, I have the game going, but I also have, like, as many minors games as I can possibly fit into one school. Like,
yeah. So my screen, which is a computer screen that I've very legally set up to watch the Mariners on, I'll typically have, like, one quarter is, like, Slack and Twitter in like a tab, and then in like the lower left I've got the Mariners game, and then on like the entire right side of the screen I've got like some computer game going, like strategy game or something that's like not like super quick pace so that I can kind of go at whatever time so I can watch as much, but it's like that's usually how I'm watching, so I'm getting to see a lot of it, but I'm, you know, it's definitely sort of degrees of separation, and that's like it is. You know, it's very much like, the Mariners are hitting almost everyone I want to watch hit. Like, you say Kikuchi's pitching, I will watch intently this inning.
Yeah.
Oh, like, Mike Leake is pitching, if I, like, see something happen.
Smoke break.
Maybe I'll check. Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe I'm zoning out here. Yeah. I've not struggled too much with the past couple weeks, and part of that's just been because I've been traveling, but like it was especially fun this last week and a half or so having JP Crawford and Shed Long up and playing, and then Kyle Seager coming back, which like probably won't be that exciting in like a month, but like
Watching Kyle Seager hit Oppo right now is really fun.
And
playing defense.
And watching ground balls to the left side.
And not holding your breath.
Exactly. Like, you know, so that was something that has made it just markedly better. And then it feels like, okay, I can watch this individual thing for a specific purpose. And so that obviously made JP Crawford's injury all the more crushing. Is like, this is a major thing I'm watching for. And
fun decrease 20%.
It definitely is sort of case by case with each at bat and each pitcher, like you said. Like, I like Kikuchi from an entertainment standpoint.
Right.
Marco Gonzalez is interesting now because he is their best pitcher, but he's not looking fantastic or where he was last year, so that's a whole other wrinkle of watching him.
We did get a question that asked if he was cooked.
Is he cooked? Yeah, that was the exact wording from, I believe, Zach. Evan James. Sorry, no Zach. Evan James said, is Marco cooked? He was never an ace, but the velocity seems to have regressed him from third starter to fifth or sixth starter, and I'm concerned it may be permanent. Recovering velocity loss to this degree is a rare feat.
I'm going to let John mostly handle this, but I will just give my, like, knee-jerk, which is he's not cooked.
Yeah, not cooked.
I mean, cooked is something that you reserve for, like, Anthony Swarzak, I think, is cooked.
Albert Pujols.
I've seen my pitchers who have been cooked, and, like, Marco is still, he's not 30, like, he doesn't have a ton of mileage on that arm because of Tommy John. Like,
right.
I don't think that what's happening is anything other than collectively bad baseball, although he is down a couple ticks in the velocity.
Yeah.
But I think what's killing him more is just, like, location and missing spots and not having as much depth on the changeup and not as much bite on the curveball and, you know, stuff that doesn't have anything to do with his arm health, I don't think.
Yeah, and before we turn this over to John, who actually knows what he's talking about when it comes to pitching, Marco is also getting just completely screwed by the defense.
Absolutely.
There's some stat out there that he has more unearned runs to his name than, like, other teams. So
I think it's six other teams.
Yeah. So, like, obviously a big part of pitching is sort of being at the mercy of your defense. Like, that's nothing that he can change necessarily. Like, the ball's going to be in play against 88-mile-an-hour pitches. But it would be a little more comforting if the defense could field the ball behind Marco.
Exactly. Marco's going to get the ball's not, he's not a strikeout pitcher. Like, the ball's going to get put in play against him. But whereas in previous years he's had a defense that was able to handle that.
Yeah. And a catcher, too.
And a catcher who's able to, like, maybe frame some stuff a little better.
Yeah.
Maybe throw out some of these would-be base stealers.
Yeah.
Instead, yeah, it's a lot of soft fly balls dropping.
Yeah, it's a nice reminder, too, that every up-the-middle player from last year is gone. Like, he was throwing to Zanino with Gene and Robinson Cano, who at the very least are, like, competent. Like, you know, they weren't maybe where they were at one point
and
in their
D.
career.
I mean, D is
D
out
also,
right now,
too. Yeah, and then, you mean, Guillermo was a good center fielder,
yep.
So.
I think Marco is fine. Fine is sort of relative in this sense. I am also worried, like Evan and like all of us, about the velocity. But I don't think that, based on everything that we've sort of talked about, like, he's still like he's got a sub-4 ERA. His FIP is about right at 4. Like, he's not giving up more dingers. Like, most of the issue for him, at least in terms of results, has been that he's having to go deeper and deeper into each inning because the defense is just, it's gone from, like,
fucking up.
Average
fucking
or
up
worse.
Behind him.
Right, like, yeah, like, at second base, they've gone from Cano to, like, a combo of D and then Hurt D and Shed. And so, like, that's a downgrade.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, D to Robbie, hard to say, but, like, the number, like, their double plays are way down.
Yeah.
Like, Ryan was, like, shaky.
Yeah,
like, you know,
that's a good way to put it.
And, you know, really, like, there was a stretch of time this year where it was, like, unless it's, like, a fly ball hit to Mitch or a grounder hit to D, it's really, like, a dodgy proposition if it's going to be an out. And
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Like, that's what Mike Leake, that's what Wade LeBlanc, like, that's what Marco, that's their whole game.
I mean,
like,
it's arguable that our best defensive positioning was when we had Braden Bishop was up,
mm-hmm.
and you had Braden Bishop in center, mm-hmm. Mitch in right, and D at second.
Yeah.
And that took care of, like, not all of the
slice.
I believe
yes,
I did a diagram.
Yes, your diagram.
So... Marco's his peripherals are not great. You know, he's not getting that many swings and misses, but that's not necessarily, that doesn't have to be his game.
Right.
It's just that the way that his game works is essentially antithetical to how this team is designed right now. But theoretically, the team that is coming, the team that's J.P. Crawford and Evan White and Brandon Bishop, or just, like, Malik Smith doing a lot about it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and, like,
heard of him.
That team suits Marco far better than the one that exists right now. And, like he's got, like, a 63% strand rate. So, anyway, I think that it's plausible that he's even intentionally trying to work more judiciously with his effort this year. That's obviously totally conjecture, but...
No, I think that that's a... I mean, Marco is, above all else, a competitor, and Marco knows what is happening with this team, and he knows what's behind him, and I think the idea of him adjusting a little bit to try to play to his defense, be like, oh, I don't trust any of you, like, I better try to... Maybe exerting a little... Maybe he's overthinking himself a little, because he can't trust his defense. He's trying to think about how to get these strikeouts that, like, really has never been a part of his game.
Yeah, I'm sure that's in the back of his mind, or probably even the front of his mind every time he's pitching, knowing that, like, if I leave a pitch over the plate and it gets hit to center field, like, I might never see that ball again, either because it's going to go over the fence or because my outfielders are going to, like, lose it somehow. Like, they're never going to return the ball to the infield. It's going to land in, like, some sort of weird vortex that Malik Smith creates. And, like, there's a lot of variables here.
With his route, like, he takes such a circuitous route that it creates, like, a vortex.
I mean, weirder things have happened, but, like, the way that this season is heading, I would not be surprised if Malik Smith falls through the field at some point.
That's fine. More playing time for Braden Bishop.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Nailed it. So, I don't think that Marco is cooked, although I do think the Mariners' 2019 season is approaching. It's at least, it's being braised, if it's not.
No, and you know what? We want it to be cooked, honestly.
We do.
Because they have no prayer. Like, we want to see the guys that we were talking about. We want to see the guys perform.
Right.
But mostly, we do not want to wind up in the worst place to be right now is where the Rangers are.
100%.
You don't want to be just winning enough games that you're coming into tough questions about. Like, Mike Minor would be a great trade piece.
Right.
But if they're winning games and if they're sitting at, if they're, like, neck and neck with the Athletics, who have terrible pitching.
Right.
If they're neck and neck with the Athletics in the division, and it's like you could potentially be looking at a wild card, I think that that is challenging as far... I think it's much better to just suck out loud and get your draft picks and be done with it.
Yeah.
And it's less pressure, too, for me. Like,
100%. I'm curious if you... I mean, Kate, you mentioned you've been big on the minors. John, I'm sure you have as well. But have there been other MLB teams that you found yourself gravitating to, or maybe certain players that you've been watching as your Mariner attention maybe is bumped down a level?
I mean, I love all the other teams, but mostly my time is spent. I love any team that is in the Mariners. I root against the Astros because fuck the Astros.
Fair.
And anyone who's playing them. I have my favorites. I have teams I want to see go all the way. Like,
so who are those teams? Tell
us. The Brewers, the Reds. Like, honestly, I wouldn't mind the Athletics, although I'm really annoyed that, like, I want people to be mad at them for not spending more money on getting a pitcher in there.
Yeah.
I'm actually rooting for the Rangers. Like, let's go Team Chaos. I like the Rangers. They're likable people. I like Levi Weaver, who's their beat writer for the Athletic.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely teams. The Rays, I love the Rays.
Big fan of the Rays.
There are tons of people I can get behind, but as long as it's not the Astros or the Angels.
Matthew, I know you are, like, because you mentioned sort of being reasonably checked out of the Mariners, but, like, I know you watch a lot of baseball. Like, you are notably, I never have to miss a Noah Syndergaard start because you can be informed every time he's on the hill.
That is a great point.
Yeah, if you want to know when Noah Syndergaard is starting, shoot Matthew a follow at Roberson at 22.
Yeah, it's mostly nonsense and notifications on when Noah Syndergaard is pitching.
Yeah.
Which has been an adventure. He's not been great, but he had one game where he threw a 1-0 shutout and hit a solo home run. And, like, that is my platonic ideal of a National League pitcher. And he threw a 100-mile-an-hour two-seam the other day.
Yep.
Like, with noticeable run that was, like, at a lefty's hip and then over the plate. And it comes in at 100. You can see him do a little, like, flourish, like, oh yeah, I fucking nailed that one. So he's great the Mets are great if you like comedy. I've been calling the whole NL East the circus division because you just have no idea what's going to happen on any given day in that division. Like, Bryce Harper's been pretty bad and it's not even really a story. Like, it's been very, I'm sure in Philly it's a story, but out here it's been kind of under the radar.
I think in Washington it's a story.
Washington, but they have their own, I mean, they've been terrible.
They're just.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's like Patrick Corbin
fire.
Is good.
Yeah.
And then Max Scherzer has an 11 ERA.
What?
Behind him, yeah.
Oh,
the bullpen has an 11. In games that Max Scherzer's pitches, the bullpen for the Nationals has an 11 ERA.
I
want to
fight all of them.
Yeah.
I love Max Scherzer.
He's great.
You can probably fight most of them.
Yeah. Probably
win. Yeah. It's like Sean Doolittle. Who's like,
I don't want to fight him.
I don't want to
He's
fight
probably
him.
Non-violent.
I love Sean Doolittle. Yeah. Sean Doolittle and I would like sit down and have a conversation where we use a lot of I feel statements.
Yeah, Russell, he'd give you some book recommendations.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I can stump for one specific player who I want to see in the All-Star Game, and more specifically the Home Run Derby, get yourself a Pittsburgh Pirates television and watch
Josh Bell.
He's amazing. He is huge, first of all. Left-handed power hitter.
His dad is yoked.
Yeah.
I want to see his dad, Marcus Stroman's dad, Tyler O'Neill's dad. Remember Tyler O'Neill's
dad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put one grill in the middle and only one of them
Mr.
can
Canada,
leave.
Canada, right? Break it down for me right now. What's your like ideal home run derby? Because I think we got a great start.
Yeah,
like
Bell,
and we're coming. They just released the All-Star Game ballot, so then that's like the more pertinent thing.
Yeah, Bell and Vogey for sure. I think I've actually coined the term because Josh Bell is a massive left-handed slugger who's pretty bad at defense at first base. He's Daniel Vogel Black. That's what I'm calling him. So him and Vogey. I mean, Joey Gallo's got to be in it just in terms of 500-foot dingers.
Yeah. Yep.
Like you need Rowdy Tellez.
Oh, the Blue Jays guy?
Yeah,
yeah.
He's Canadian.
That's a deep cut.
He's just like, if you made Bogey 6'4", but like did not remove any of the like diameter.
You gotta put Vladito.
That's what I was gonna say. If we're going
Why
Blue
not?
Jays,
yeah,
put Vladito in there.
Well, he just hasn't hit that many homers yet, but like he should be in there.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll do it in, like, a home run derby.
You get Derek Dietrich. If it's a time,
Bellinger would be fun. He's also, like, the best player on earth right
now. Yeah, he's, like, on pace for, like, a 13 WAR season somehow. Like.
Hey, you know who has a lot of home runs lately?
Jay Bruce?
Mark Canna.
Kate.
You can put him in.
For the listeners at home, I pulled out two swords, pointing them both at Kate right now. She's my blood enemy. Yeah, it's my absolute worst timeline is Mark Canna actually being good, because it was even before Slide Gate. I hated him so much.
Yeah.
Just for dumb reasons. Like, it was a pure sports hate for his face and his sideburns and his walk-up song. Yeah, the balaclava when it's like 60 degrees. It's like, this is our summer, dude. You're fine. He's a foodie on Instagram, which tells you a lot. It's a lot of him as the only person in the picture where it's like, me, like, had a great time, or, like, we had a good time, but it's just him.
Yes.
Like, Mark.
Me and my friends were just out of work.
Yeah, also laughing. Yeah, so don't put him in the home run derby. I will not watch.
I think what crystallized my hatred of Mark Canna was when he tweeted about the slide and was like, illegal.
He well actually did.
And dare I say, savvy. And it was the dare I say that I was like, well, now I've sworn an oath to kill you.
Yeah.
Should I ever see him in a public
place?
He
definitely like swooped on his fedora while he was there.
Dare I say.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wrote it first with like a feather pen and then showed it to his teammates, like, what do we think? And then he actually tweeted it.
Yeah.
He had to draft it first. You know, you can't rush that.
Mark Canna definitely uses a quill and ink.
Yeah.
I think all of these are good, like, good and fun options for the home run derby. We have to all get together. I don't care about seeing any Mariners in the All-Star game.
No.
Sorry, Omar Narvaez. But get Vogel back there. Over my dead body.
Yeah.
Get Vogel back.
That would make this season a success.
I mean, he is like by far the most deserving DH.
And he's good with the media.
They say the JD Martinez is what the people say is the most deserving DH.
But like by actual production.
John hates the people.
Like, well, but like also just by like production.
I mean, this was like Mike Petrillo, I think, on Twitter. And he used the numbers because people did come at him about Vogel back. And he was like, look at the numbers.
No. There's no.
Actually, you know what his argument was? It wasn't the numbers, because Vogelbach actually, I think, has better numbers. It was, look at the long-term production, I'm going to take J.D. Martinez, which is a bullshit
That's the entire antithesis of the idea. Like, the All-Star game is about who's that year.
Right.
Like, who's popping up.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, did J.D. Martinez, when J.D. Martinez goes upper tank at Seiko, or at T-Mobile Park, we can talk.
Yeah.
And when the walls...
You'll have to turn around and hit it as a left-handed hitter and get it into the third deck, but...
Yeah.
Because there's no equivalent on the...
It's a street.
Hit it out of Seiko.
Yeah, okay. Hit it out of Seiko.
Or T-Mobile.
J.D. Martinez, if you're listening, you coward.
Come to Seiko.
Hit a ball out of T-Mobile Park or stay the fuck out of Seiko.
Or you will not earn our votes. For
our precious, heavily voted
Or I will vote for Rowdy Tellez ahead of you. Before we move on, Franmil Reyes also would be a great home run derby person.
Yep.
And Pete Alonso. On Team Comedy.
Yes, Team Comedy.
All right, so as we fall deeper into this pretty terrible season, it's going to bring up a lot of sort of prospect talk and draft talk. This season obviously affects the 2020 draft, but the 2019 draft is fast approaching. I definitely know what day it is on, but I'm not telling you because the fun is in the surprise.
It's June 3rd to the 5th.
So it's next week, Monday through Wednesday.
And it starts at, like, 4 p.m. our time.
Yeah, but the Mariners have the 20th pick, so they'll be much later than that.
Yeah, it'll be a while. And that's, like, the pregame shit and all that stuff. So, yeah, anytime. We have pick 20, and then we have a third-round pick, and then we have a supplemental pick. So it's, like, 30, it's like 20, 59, and 77.
76 now. 76. Just one player up. Signed. And we have, I'm just going to pump it, we've been doing a ton of draft prep stuff on the website.
Yes.
So, if you are at all interested in that, like, we've got recaps of prior drafts, we've got a bunch of mock draft coverage, we have our own mock draft, we've got...
Organizational overview of, like, all the... Who's there in the system now and
people
how
who
doing.
The team has supposedly been linked to. Yeah.
And you know what? If you're not into the draft because you're like, oh, I can't handle that. Like, no, get into the draft. Get into the draft. Like, be a draft person.
Yeah.
It's much better. Shut up. Well, like, I mean, yes, you could have other hobbies or whatever.
Here's what I'll say is I think the way that the Mariners are playing right now sucks in a lot of ways. And it's not going to give you that same sensation of watching the team every day and getting, you know, excited about the, you know, the possibility of the playoffs and things. But I think it is a very satisfying thing of you get to learn these individual stories, you get to learn these players and how they come together, and you get to see them really develop before your eyes. And you get to do that with a bunch of other people who are similarly invested, similarly interested. So...
And it's not just the Mariners, but, like, maybe you pick out a few guys who are your favorites and they go other places.
Sure.
Then all of a sudden you have stakes in other dudes, other places. And you kind of root for them as people, not just as... And they're kind of... You feel ownership over them. Like,
I was going to say, Luis Urias. Like, that's a big-time guy that
I love Luis Urias for a long time. Always, always. Nick Allen, who is actually just in High A in the Oakland A's system, which I would never be excited about an A's prospect, but he's a kid who has diabetes, and there were all these questions about whether or not he could play. He has, like, a pump, and I thought that was so unfair that, like, a kid who had clear ability was being knocked down on the draft. So it just gets you invested in, like, kind of the stories. And the stories of the, and they're kids, and they love baseball, and it's very pure, and that's my pitch.
Yeah, you know what else is a fun part of the draft? Is reading all of these kids' ridiculous names.
They get more ridiculous every year,
I swear. Oh, yeah. And this will lead us into a new game that is sweeping the nation. It is called Draft Prospect or 90s Pop Star.
Ooh.
The game is very simple. I will read Kate and John a name. They have to tell me, is this an actual draft-eligible prospect or is this a 90s pop star? This was inspired by a game I played on my college radio show, which was NFL Draft Prospect or Rapper, which was very hard, actually. They have basically the same names, which I learned is pretty similar for white dudes who are making music in the 90s and are now playing baseball. So, do we understand the rules?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Extra points if you think it's a pop star, if you can tell me who they are, what they did, blah, 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 okay. What band they were in. All right.
What if we don't care who they are or what they did?
Then you're a monster.
Where they were as long as you love.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't know that was happening.
Oh.
Wow.
Hello, everyone.
That's how you do it,
folks. I'm the winner of the game. Yeah. The game does not need to happen anymore.
You know, in this case, you get what you give. New radicals, baby.
No.
All right.
Wow.
First up, Jacob Underwood, draft prospect or 90s pop star?
I haven't heard of him.
Yeah, I should mention that they actually know the draft prospects. I do not.
I haven't heard of him. I would guess draft prospect, but...
I'm going to say 90s pop star because I have a better chance of knowing a draft prospect's name than I do a 90s pop star.
That's a good strategy.
That is actually a good strategy. Wait, I want to change my answer.
Okay.
I also want to say pop star.
You're both correct.
Woo!
Jacob Underwood was in the band O-Town. Do y'all remember O-Town?
Oh,
absolutely
O-Town.
Not.
They won Making the Band. I think the first season.
Wow.
Ashley Parker Angel was in this band, who's a
okay.
real person.
Wow.
It's a man.
Are they
Ashley
related
Parker
to Chris?
Angel. I don't think so.
That's
I didn't do that much research. My favorite part, though, from the O-Town Wikipedia page, the band is named after Orlando, Florida, where none of the members are from. That's a line on the Wikipedia page. So, yes, Jacob Underwood was in that. All right, next up, John Bissonette.
How's that spelled? Can you use it in a sentence?
John Bissonette is either a draft prospect or a 90s pop star.
Oh,
spelling
man.
Is B-I-S-S-O-N-E-T-T-E.
That's about right.
Yeah.
I will say...
I'm going to say draft prospect.
I'm okay. saying 90s, but I think you're running another pop star out of.
Oh, interesting. Kate is correct.
Yeah.
He is a shortstop for Baylor, but he is pop star adjacent. This is truly insane. His dad is Elton John's bass player.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't ever say I don't do research, people.
Yeah.
His dad also played with Ringo Starr, ELO, Electric Light Orchestra,
wow.
and David Lee Roth. So.
But did he play with LFO?
Probably not.
AKA the light funky ones.
No.
AKA Summer Girls.
Who, like John Bissonette and New Kids on the Block, had a bunch of hits.
Oh.
Boom! And Chinese food famously makes them sick.
About that for John Bissonette.
No, no. Also, I should point out, I don't know if he's actually going to get drafted. This is just a guy who I found who's
yeah.
draft eligible. Shout out to David Adler, had a list of good draft names, which helped. So, moving right along, Jaron Shelby.
Draft prospect.
Draft prospect.
It is a draft prospect. Outfielder for Kentucky, who is Josh Harrison's cousin.
Oh, I also think that the name Jaron probably is like a lot, like last 15,
oh,
like
that's a good point.
20 years at like,
yeah,
it was maybe coming in then. I don't think
that's
it was
a good point.
Like
it's like how no one was named
years.
Shaq until the early 90s,
yeah.
and then everyone was named,
yeah.
Shaq. Not everyone, but.
Yeah.
So Kate's 3-for-3, right?
I am 3-for-3.
All right, this is a real tough one. Brian Yale, spelled like the college.
Pop star.
I believe draft prospect.
Oh, John said that with some confidence, and he's wrong.
Damn.
Brian Yale is the bassist for none other than Matchbox 20. Who, we laugh, 4 Grammy nominations for Matchbox 20.
It's like the Buffalo Bills.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah,
he's ride or die with Rob Continue Thomas.
On to be to do what you love, even if you're terrible at it.
Yeah.
Someone somewhere will reward you for it.
That's a great point. That is a great point. He's a ride or die with Rob Thomas. He was in their band before Matchbox 20, which was called Tabitha's Secret. Which I don't know if that's a play on Victoria's Secret, or they just thought it sounded cool.
This is much more worrisome
yeah.
than the secret, I
Yeah,
think.
What's the secret? Is the secret that the name sucks? Because that's not a secret. Although, what does Matchbox 20 mean? It's it's all bad.
I was gonna say, like, it was very much now number,
right?
And that's a good like point. Maroon 5,
Sum 41,
yeah, like
now number,
Eiffel 65,
yeah,
yeah. So yeah, Brian Yale, bassist, a little unwell. All right, I got two more for you. This is my favorite name of the bunch.
Oh wow,
Justin Jeffrey. I think this is right in the middle of the Venn diagram.
Yeah. I think, yeah. Because, like...
Because you... Jeremy Jeffries is...
Yeah.
That's a guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go pop star.
Okay.
Justin Jeffrey, man. This is a real... I feel like if they're British, then it's... Well, I mean, if they're British, it's pop star. But if they're American, I feel like it's a baseball player. So I'm saying draft prospect.
It is... A guy in 98 degrees.
Yes.
He is a dear friend of Nick Lachey. They were They were in a barbershop quartet together.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Justin's Wikipedia page.
I just want 100% the soundtrack in The Bad Place. Yeah.
Justin's Wikipedia page mentions that he's a vocal supporter of Cincinnati, Ohio, but like not the sports teams, just the city. He loves Cincinnati, Ohio. And since 98 degrees, he has pivoted his focus on politics and activism.
Oh,
so, what? Justin Jeffrey, 2024.
Maybe. Yeah. I want to get a look at that.
That does not clarify what they are.
Yeah, I want to get a look at that platform.
Simply that he's now sort of putting them under the microscope.
Exactly. Okay, last one. Kate, I think, is running the table here.
I am.
Absolutely.
All right, last one. Jensen Elliott.
That's a draft prospect.
All right, is he too famous? All right, that guy's too good. But he is, yeah, he is a pitcher for Oklahoma State.
Woo!
And there's nothing notable about him. I just thought Jensen Elliott was a good name.
That's very good.
Pew, 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 pew.
If you needed any more evidence that Kate knows the most about anything, of anyone, Lookout Landing staff, both pop music and baseball and college kids playing baseball,
yes.
Kate's got you covered.
Yes.
All right, so do you guys, you are the ones... You and a couple other members of our staff who do great work, like you said, check out lookoutlanding.com, are pretty invested in the draft. So tell me, I mean, we have some guys who we've written about, or who you have written about, that you're kind of excited about. I guess for each of you, who is, if you had your druthers, who would the Mariners pick at 20? Realistically speaking, obviously, they're not going to get Adley Rutschman.
Yeah, no, realistically speaking, I would like them to pick Matthew Allen, if he was there. I don't know that he's going to be there. He's probably one of the best high school pitchers, if not the best.
Big righty. I mean...
Yeah, and I mean, I saw him in the Perfect Game Classic, and he looked, I thought, really... He looked like a man among boys, even though I hate that phrase. But I thought he looked really solid. There's a lot of projectability there, but also polish. And that's the problem with draft, with prep pitchers.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to make it that far. Again, I would love to pick Daniel Espino.
That was going to be my pick.
Sorry. No. Okay. I'm going to go elsewhere then.
Okay.
I'm going to pick something. I'm going to let you talk about Daniel Espino, and then I'm going to make my pick, which is super out there.
Bring it.
So, go for it.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. So Daniel Espino would be my preference. He's definitely a very controversial choice.
Like, he started out in, like, the top 10, and then he was in, like, 10 to 20, and now he's, like, almost falling out of the first round entirely.
Yeah, and basically the issue...
Wait, hold on. He is a pitcher, position player?
He is a right-handed pitcher. He's a high schooler from Georgia.
Okay.
Although he grew up in Panama, he moved to the United States in his sophomore year.
Basically, so he wouldn't have to go through the international draft.
Right.
Which is smart. Super smart.
He's about 6'1". He's been listed anywhere from like 6 foot to like 6'4", and it's kind of confusing, but he's probably in like the 6'1", maybe 6'2" range. But essentially just like big lower half, throws upper 90s.
Best velocity in the class.
Best of any high school pitcher, best velocity. And has two different, like, very distinct breaking balls, good power curve, good slider, sort of a meh changeup, but you can work on that. The knock on him is he's got long arm action, which is true. You know, he takes a while to get his arm through, and that, people worry, one, will hurt his command, and two, might lead him to get hurt more easily, especially because when you're a high schooler and you throw 100 miles per hour or close to it, you're in dangerous waters. But he's just a really high character kid.
Yeah.
Very hard worker. Really uses his lower half well. I think his arm action is not particularly bad or long relative to his size. I think he is a possible like top level like frontline starter if it all comes together. And I see why there's a risk there, because one, any high school pitcher, no matter how polished they are, is a higher risk than any other type of player. But especially in a lousy draft relative to other drafts,
it's a really bad draft.
He's one of the more high potential guys. Yeah. So that's what I like about him.
So sticking with the theme of it's a lousy draft, and I think that this is the year to roll the dice and gamble and risk big. I'm going to pick a kid who is not even in the top 100.
Oh.
And I'm going to go with Jordan Brewer from Michigan. Most people see him, and I mean his stock has been steadily rising, especially because he just won Big Ten Player of the Year. Mm. But he's a true five-tool athlete. He has speed, he has some power, he has the ability to hit for contact, he's a great defender, and then he's just a super high-character person.
Yeah.
And he had kind of a confusing route, because...
Went to JC, right?
He was going to be a walk-on at Michigan on their football program, and then he dislocated his shoulder his senior year, and he lost his spot.
Sure.
And so he went to a JC, and he picked one that was, like, deliberately very small. Not even one of, like, the JUCOs that people know or talk about. It's called Indian Trail Community College. It was close to his house and to his high school girlfriend, who's at Michigan State, who's, like, been with for years and years and years. It overlooks, their baseball field overlooks a prison.
Oh.
And he would have to, like, go back to the area that kind of borders the prison and the baseball field to collect the balls that he would hit out during practice. I mean, it's just super gritty. Like, he's Native American as well. He's a member of one of the tribes that's in... I cannot pronounce it. I'm not going to say it without looking at it. It's two P words. Not going to do that. but... So, and his Native American identity is really important to him. He walks up to, like, kind of this cool electronic remix of, like, a Native drum song.
Whoa.
I just think he's started a charity that hooked up his baseball team in his first year at Michigan. So, Michigan watched him while he was at community college. They pulled him out. They brought him to campus. They worked with him on his swing, getting him to hit more line drives, because the Michigan coaching staff is very forward-thinking, I think.
Yeah.
They're very, like, elevate and celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
So they got him to start putting the ball in the air more, and the power ticked up huge, and he just kind of blossomed. Even as a JUCO kid who hadn't been, like, a big baseball prospect in high school, didn't get drafted out of high school, came in and, like, became the leader of the team his junior year. Got all of his teammates to participate in, you know, it's called Night to Shine. It's the night for people with high school students with developmental disabilities, the prom night. Got all his teammates to get involved with that. They all took, like, a kid out and had this big, you know, he's off the charts. And I think if he had played on the Cape, people would talk about him. If he had any other background, people would talk about him.
Yeah.
But,
I believe he's sort of in that, like, he's somewhere in the, like, 125 to like 70,
yeah,
like MLB 70s range for various places.
MLB and Pipeline has them at like 110.
Yeah, NBA has them around 70.
They're definitely the high ones on it,
yeah,
because again, okay, they're always kind of the high ones on college, I think.
Yeah.
I think in a draft that doesn't have standout talent or loud talent, and with the Mariners picking as far back as they do, why not swing? You know, sign him under slot. If you still want one of the many prep kids, you can use your over slot money second round.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, take him second round like they did Josh Storrs last year, when they kind of shocked the world with that pick.
I was going to say, Storrs, I was hearing a lot of Storrs, like, with what you're discussing.
It's a hugely Storrs-like.
Someone very well-liked, very well-respected, who, like, popped up and, like, really showcased.
I don't know if he has. He wasn't raised in baseball the way that Stores was. I think.
Because
he's a three sport athlete in high school. You know, he's a basketball, football.
That's almost an asset in some.
I think it is.
Some would think
he's the kind of like twitch, like just explosive athlete that I think you don't always like Kyler Murray. If Kyler Murray had decided to stick with baseball,
So, something that we've heard, I would say, not necessarily unfortunately.
Wait, Matthew, do you want to make a pick?
Oh man, I mean, so many to choose from.
Who's your guy? We did a sort of whole your guy.
Yeah, we did a guy. I got assigned a guy. I got Brett Beatty.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good baseball name. He looked fine. I mean, I made that pick because I told Kate, who assigned him to me, that I would like a third baseman because I feel like the Mariners are going to need that.
They do.
Yeah, so I think I said third baseman or glove first outfielder and was directed towards Brett Batty, who was pretty interesting. He's like 19 and a half or something, but he's still in high school.
Super old.
Yeah. He was interesting,
but that was Jared Kelnick, too. Right?
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Although he's like still class. Like almost a year older than Kelnick.
His parents must have just loved him and wanted to keep him home.
Yeah, which is adorable. I mean, Corbin Carroll's interesting just because he's local. I'm going to be, you know, slightly monitoring his career, I guess, but I don't know anything about him. If there's any USD Toreros, I'm sure they'll do great. I'm admittedly not very well versed on this topic.
You'll learn to love them, though.
This Jordan Brewer kid sounds amazing. I mean, that was a great story. Yeah. If they have a good human story, that'll definitely bump them up a few spots on my board.
Always. And again, like, it's a weak draft. Draft guys who have good stories. Draft guys who are good people. Like, having a great work ethic can carry you so far in this game.
This is UC San Diego. Oh, get this away from me.
Excuse me.
I don't. Right. No, that's a different school. But UC San Diego is where Jerry DePoto's kid is.
That's right. Sorry, here we go. Chris Murphy.
My Torero son, left-handed pitcher. Take him 1-1. He sits 90-91, but can rim up to 94-95. Hey, Chris Murphy. He's at 155 on This Is Baseball America.
Yep.
So that's, fifth round?
Fourth.
All right, Chris Murphy, if you're listening, come on the podcast.
You're my son.
Yeah, even though you are probably like the same age as me.
So something we've heard a lot, we've seen it in mock drafts, we've heard from people who have spoken, who have heard sourced things, is that the Mariners are looking at prep infielders, and specifically middle infielders, that they see sort of big upside in. And there's sort of a range of people. There's Anthony Volpe is one.
It's the name we're hearing.
Most, but there's also Nassim Nunez. There's Gunnar Henderson. There's
Sam
Matthew.
Cavaco, Matthew Lugo.
Yeah, so there's a few guys. But
Matthew's just sitting here nodding.
There's that many?
These are all names.
I guess of the people... Of sort of that group, potentially is what the Mariners are looking at most in that first round excites you the most, or you know, what are your thoughts on that as a strategy as well, Kate?
I mean, I'm not super enthused by any of these names to be honest, but I do like Matthew Lugo. He's big. He's shows some aptitude to like maybe have a Carlos Correa type ceiling. If you're gonna dream on someone, I think that's a great one to dream on.
I was gonna say, it doesn't seem like there's that many prep infielders who have panned out in terms of like high draft picks. Like Correa is the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
Who was pulled. There have been a couple recently. But it's definitely a trickier proposition because it takes often you pick them and then they need time to bulk up and time to like both get the strength to hang and still adjust to see, like, can you still hang defensively?
Sure.
Which is the issue with Nassim Nunez, who's probably the best defender of all of them.
But he's tiny.
He's very tiny. And, I mean, the tininess helps him as a defender because he can just get to any ball. And he has a super, like, cannon arm, like, 100-mile-an-hour exit velo on his arm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, no.
There's a guy named Kieran Paris who's actually pretty sweet. He's like,
I know, they all sound
super fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, it's like, yeah.
His name's Kieran?
K-Y-R-E-N.
I was going to ask
that. Kieran, or I assumed it was Kieran, but
I was going to say like K-H for no reason. Why?
Isn't there like a Kieran Lovegrove or something like
that's
that?
That's a guy,
who's
yeah.
also a pitcher, but that's not a guy who's eligible anyway. Different spelling, but like, you know, so it's a lot of guys who are like, you've got a tool or like a few tools, and then something else has to pop up.
It's no slam dunks. I mean, the only slam dunk is Bobby Witt Jr., who's going to go like second overall.
Yeah, like the Royals are like,
I'm pretty sure Adley Rutschman's going
to
go first overall.
To the Royals.
People are kind of second guessing it as we get closer to the draft.
Because there's nothing else to do but do that.
I think really honestly, like the first five.
Yeah.
The first five or six names, I don't know what exact order they'll go in, but those are all pretty much set in stone. And then even once you get into the back half of the top 10, just because it's such a thinner draft, but like once you get up to like 10-15, things start getting really flexible, and then 15-20 I think is a huge crapshoot, and then the Mariners just sitting there right at the lip of 20.
That's
a
weird
spot. Really difficult place to predict.
Very weird spot specifically
with this year. I don't know, maybe it is other years as well. Last year we had 14 and it was so much easier to kind of
it was easier, but it was also a deeper draft. Like it was
such
it is probably the worst draft since we've been like really focused on the draft. Like it legitimately is a really thin group and a lot of uncertainty.
I guess something we should raise, just because Volpe comes up so much, is the signability concern of him, which is that he's committed to Vanderbilt, obviously a powerhouse program, headed off to Omaha this year, heavy favorites to win the World Series. So to get him away from there, and then also there's some rumblings that like he's an East Coast guy, he's New Jersey, maybe he wants to stay East Coast, he probably doesn't want to come very far away to all of our various far-flung places.
He's on the He's on the same team as Jack Leiter, who is Al Leiter's son, and is like
also committed to Vandy,
and also like has a like super high demand, which you know is
so Leiter's like Volpe is rumored to be $3 million,
at least
would wipe out about 40% of the Mariners' pool for this draft,
and
they don't have that much. They have like 10th least.
It's the same spot as where they do pick, but it's unfortunate that even with an extra pick, they're still not really.
Yeah, it really sucks.
Boost all that much, and
Arizona has like $16 million or something insane.
And that is sort of a tricky thing with the MLB draft that always is worth remembering. It's like unlike the NFL or MLB, it's not really like, or not MLB, unlike the NBA, it's not always just like the best player that's here.
Yeah.
Of course, I'll take that person. Right. What combination of like willingness to sign and likelihood to sign, because those first 10 rounds, any pick that you don't sign, you don't get the like money attached to that pick, and that can trickle down to you're not able to sign all these other people. It's going to be really interesting, and it's weird. It's been weird to hear them so zoned in on high school, especially since a Jerry DiMoto like led team has never picked a high school player in the first round.
Highest was Joe Rizzo in 2016.
Yeah, and that was 50th. You know,
yeah.
Or maybe it was 47th. But
it was similar to where they
second
this year. Yeah.
So, that's 9 years of drafts and 8 years of having a first round pick. No high schoolers first. So, we'll see.
We sure will. Wow. Okay. Let's move to a question because I want to talk again. Like when you're in the car as a kid and playing the quiet game, the reward is I get to read Twitter questions. Hooray. All right. I actually love this question. This is from our friend Isabel Manassian, who has a rare serious question. Her words, not mine. Do you feel like your Mariners fandom has changed since you started covering the team? And if so, how? Similarly, has your connection to the way you view baseball in general changed during this period?
I would say that I cannot be emotional about the team, and I think that that was a lesson that 2017 taught me, and then 2018 really just ground in. Is like, you can't be emotional, you have to be really, when you do it every day, clinical and kind of detached. And I mean, in a weird way, it's almost like playing baseball itself, where like you have to just always be able to let whatever happened that day go. Like, oh, they lost and they lost bad. And but I cannot, I was so wrecked last year because it was so fun and I really thought we were going to make it, and then just that crushing disappointment. So in a lot of ways, having a losing year this year is a gift, because I don't have to worry about endangering my heart in that way.
Yeah.
Even though they tried, those little buggers, they tried. They tried at the beginning to break my heart again. But no, it's just, you know, practicing that, like, whatever happened at the end of the day is what happened at the day, and then you just flush it away, and then you start fresh.
How about you, Matthew?
Yeah, so this is the definition of being a front runner, but it definitely matters how the team is doing. Like, I started last season, which was the fun season, and like that was the most I'd ever been invested in a Mariners team, and it obviously was like a dream for the first 3 months or so. And I, you know, had the same thought that you did, like, oh, it's finally going to happen, and like, thank God.
And I'm going to be here for it.
Like, paying attention, yeah, and living here for it, because I'd been in San Diego for a couple of years. So having that all happen kind of at once was really cool, and it was a hell of a season to follow. But it definitely gave me an appreciation of fandom and of baseball in general, where it's like, it doesn't care about you, you know? Yeah. It's like really kind of like life in a lot of ways, where it's like you can have your idea of what's happening or your sort of vision of what other people are doing, but it's not actually reality. You know what I mean? Like, we were all like, oh, the Mariners are so great, this is fun, and then you realize, like, okay, maybe they actually weren't that good. Maybe a lot of it was luck, and, you know, and the window was 1 year, and now that window is very slammed shut. So there was a little bit of burnout that came with that too, I think. Like, having, you know, such a high and then to such a low, it's like, emotionally it was very draining in a lot of ways. So it's why this year I've kind of kept them at arm's length, I guess. Even when they were 13-2, I guess this is, you know, part of being a smart fan, and I cringe just as much as you did when I said that. But, like, we knew they weren't actually good. So that's why it was easy to be like, oh, like, they just played 15 really good games, and this is a blast, but it's not going to sustain itself. Yeah. So I would say my approach has changed in that I try to be more measured and not just fall head over heels in love with, you know, specific players or specific teams or feelings, because it can change in the blink of an eye, basically. One series against the Blue Jays that did it for me last year. It lives in infamy. But I mean, there's, when I can remember actually when I was in college, I got to cover a Clippers game, and I talked to the SB Nation writer for the Clippers site who was there, and he told me, like, yeah, I kind of hate the Clippers now that I've been, like, covering them so closely. And he was credentialed for games, so he was, like, you know, there every day, because you see, like, you know, I'm not trying to drag the LA Clippers by any means, but like, for him, he's like, yeah, this organization isn't great, like, it's not, you know, the just not a great, it was more like, what are they doing in terms of signing players? Sure. Like, it was like a very top heavy roster, and you're like, when you're here every day and you're seeing them at practice and games, like, this is not it, like, why are we why was I at home pretending like, oh, they could be the 3 seed or whatever? Yeah. It's like, no, your team sucks. That's sort of where I think about that a lot, because that guy who had been a fan, like, doing the SB Nation thing that we're all doing, where he's like, yeah, I'm a fan, and I think I can, you know, understand this team pretty well. And then you get into it, and you're like, oh, now I understand it more, and I was so wrong. So that's a little bit, it's a little bit a combination of, like, I don't want to feel too much, and, like, being, again, I hate saying this, but smart enough not to care enough, where it's like, don't fall in love with the results of, you know, a game or a week or 15 games or whatever.
I think it's something that Kate said really resonated, because, like, the feeling of playing the game, like, I played baseball essentially most of, like, at least 50 to 60% of the year for most of my life, that I've, most of the time I've been alive, and, like, I've been on mostly dog shit teams, so, like, I was very well inculcated into, like, you know, not really getting too invested in what happened, and that's not how everyone would respond to it, but I think that that's just always kind of been how I responded to the games itself. So in terms of the baseball itself, I don't think it's really changed my way of responding on a day-to-day basis. Certainly I follow it more in more depth, but I do think that, especially another thing that I've learned as I've done this more, and that's something that I think I've also learned from Kate, although over a longer period of time, is finding a way to home in on the individual as opposed to the sort of team as a whole, because
vampire out the joy. Hello, Modesto.
Exactly, though. Like, I mean, like, we had that whole spiel about the minors and the draft, and, like, that's really, like, made a big difference in my continued, like, all right, what am I interested in for baseball today? So, like, some days I'll be like, all right, I'm going to put
on... LJ Newsom is starting.
Exactly. Like, all right, I'm putting on MILB TV today. Like, oh, like...
I have that with just the big leagues.
But, like, I think that's still a big part of it is, like... Yeah.
You have to derive joy from it somewhere.
And you got to find it somewhere. And it's, like, it's sort of like following the NBA, which, like, I love following the NBA, but, like, I don't know, the Sonics. And there
you're
were a couple...
Detached, yeah.
There were multiple years where I, like, couldn't watch basketball without being, like, really bummed. And the way I got back into it was, like, following individuals and getting really excited about that. And so I think following the game and following the sport every day and having to write about it consistently, getting to write about it and having to write about it, you know, it's both. But it really grinds down the sort of magic of the game as a whole. Like, I find pretty much every team in baseball grimy, and, like, the enterprise itself is super messed up. And, like, I love sort of the stories of international prospects, because they're come from all over the world with all these fascinating stories and all these people who are really smart and talented, and they are also, like, 12 and 13 year olds getting signed by teams that are then, like, lying about that or, like, obscuring that, and everyone just looks the other way. It's like, that part super grimy, but, like, following you, the sort of cognitive dissonance that you have to hold in your head is the players themselves are what makes this special, and it always has been for me. That's what I loved about it when I was growing up, when I would, like, read those little, like, books that were little individual stories about, like, random, you know, like...
And that gets into that feeling of, like, before you realize how bad the organizations are. Like, that guy at the Clippers, like, he probably grew up loving, you know, a player on the Clippers in the 90s, and then gets older, like, still has that love for the team, but realizes, like... Oh yeah, the owner's wildly racist. Yeah. Or then, you know, afterwards, like, we signed Paul Pierce, or, like, things like that, where it's like, oh, like, you can still love them and also hate them. Like, hate the things that they do. Kind of like family. Like, I don't agree with everything all my family members do, but I love them and support them. You know, it's just like, oh, I don't have to fuck with you on a daily basis.
Yeah. And it's something that brings all of us together, which honestly, that's like, true. I can't, like, I moved back to Seattle after college and did not have that many of my friends here, and the reason I, like, the community that I found was the community through this. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. We have another question about fandom. This is from @GarbageSprite on Twitter.
Excellent.
What's up? How do you deal with fans who express their fandom by throwing personal insults at the players? So I'm sure this has come from both stadium experiences. I mean, Twitter is not a great place for this, where, you know, a player makes, you know, a physical error, which happens every day, and then someone calls them, you know, they suck, or they're an asshole, or blah, blah, blah. How do you guys deal with that? I've been at many a game with Kate, and she has, I would say, expert heckles, where they're not actually offensive, but they're cutting.
Yeah.
That's...
I think that for the hecklers out there...
That's 12 years of Catholic school.
That's what that is. That's what it is.
Very cutting.
It's an extension of guilt.
Yeah, no, I think just like, it's very easy to be mean on kind of a base level. But I think you see this too with the toast man in West Virginia. It's just heckling and being an asshole are two different things, right? Mm-hmm. Like heckling is kind of an art. And just like picking on someone for big gross things or like even for just making an error or whatever is not unlike my height of erudite sophistication when I call him Jumbo Dingus Martinez.
That almost sounds like a compliment.
Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, I think fans are frustrated and you do see like that bubbling over with a lot of people on Twitter who are just like, this team sucks, little league team, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's a lot from like people who don't know how hard it is.
And also, little league baseball rules.
Yeah, it's not. It's like calling someone a woman to insult them. Like, yeah. That's not an insult.
Like, have you met women? They fucking rock.
Yeah, rule. I understand that frustration, but I just choose not to engage with anyone. Like, obviously, running the Lookout Landing account, we get a lot of that. So I just don't engage with those tweets. I've muted a lot of people.
The mute button is a savior.
The mute button is your friend. And I just think, like, and again, it comes a little bit from knowing the players as people. Like, when you talk to them or you know that they're just guys kind of out there trying to do their best, it's like, you're disappointed for them or in them, but it's hard to, like, villainize them in that way. Like, let's say the villains for, like, people who are actually villains.
Yeah.
Like, Roberto Osuna, like, Addison Russell. Like, those guys, you can screen that and tell are pieces of garbage because they're gross and terrible. But, like, let's not go after just people who are kind of trying to do a job and not do it well.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't, like, it's kind of a cliche, but, like, no other job has people just yelling at them, like, in their cubicle, like, hey, you suck. Like, that would obviously, no one would like that, you know what I mean? So, like, just because it's a sporting event. People really, like, lose all sense of rules at sporting
events.
They do.
People
just act like they've never acted before. It's crazy. Okay, let's end with a sort of a palate cleanser.
Okay, I love it.
This comes from, we sent out a tweet asking for questions, which mentioned that John had been essentially kidnapped by Frontier Airlines. So, Grant Bronsden on Twitter asked us, what are your thoughts on airports? A good place to hang out and relax, or a stress-filled hellhole? Or somewhere in the middle also is an option.
Let's just do, like, a quick, like, we can get into more depth, but, like, pro, like, anti or pro airport?
Overall, anti-airport.
I mean, airports are necessary. I'm kind of pro-airport because it means you're going somewhere, you're changing something.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm really interested in airports
This is not a hand-up or hand-down.
No,
I just want to say.
I'm interested in airports as liminal spaces because, like, you're not where you're supposed to be and you're not home. You're in, like, a transitional space.
Yeah.
So, again, like, rules don't apply.
Sometimes
so,
you're
like,
there for, like, 9 hours, though.
Yeah, but I'll eat, like, a lot of Starbucks or, like, sometimes some McDonald's.
I think it's Spencer Hall on Twitter who said your vacation starts when you get to the airport, so eat 12 Cinnabons or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it really is that no rules zone.
Yeah, the airport is no rules. And I did work at the airport.
I didn't know this.
But I worked at Shuttle Express,
which was outside
the airport. So that was back when you could just kind of go through the airport when you have to necessarily have a ticket.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time in SeaTac.
SeaTac's one of the good ones.
And
not all airports.
SeaTac was home too. When I was getting off the plane all the time, when I was coming out from college, from living back east, like, yeah, it was home. So I think airports are contextual. You're highly contextual, but and they can be super miserable, and you can be delayed, you can be stressed, and. But also you get to choose how you respond to the airport.
Right. I will say I really like the airport once you're at the gate. It's everything before that that I don't like at all. Getting to the airport kind of sucks. Security obviously is never fun. But I love a gate. It's not even fully an alcohol thing. Like, I know a lot of people love, like, the drink before they get on the plane. But for me, it's just like, I don't know, once I get through security and I'm at the gate, and let's say I have, like, 45 minutes until I'm boarding, that's when I'm like, very relaxed. As long as they have good Wi-Fi. Otherwise, then I will probably go to the bar, just out of pure boredom. But I can remember I was coming home from Austin City Limits, the music festival, and I just treated my body like a dumpster for several days. And my body was very mad at me for that. But then I settled into the gate in Austin to fly back home. And I remember putting on a Dodgers-Brewers NLCS game that was happening at the time. And I probably just watched like two innings. But I could feel my body like coming back into itself. Where it's like, oh, this is what you normally do. This is how your life is supposed to feel like. And this is like stasis.
It was like you were a couple on vacation. You had like a terrible fight. Yeah. And then you get to the airport and you're like, all right, we're going to leave the fight there.
Right. And then then I saw Walker Buehler throw 100 miles an hour. I was like, oh my God, I love this. And I'm not on mushrooms in a field anymore. So this is much better. So that part is nice. Like once you're at the gate relaxed, I like that. But I get very impatient waiting in lines. Yeah. So I don't like that part.
No. I agree. I mean, I'm always excited to be at an airport. I hate flying. Like, I don't like the act of flying. Like, I'm kind of claustrophobic. Definitely afraid of heights. So, like,
yes.
I'm definitely, like, cleansed, just white-knuckling.
Sure, as a
you're
giant,
also very
too.
Big.
Yeah.
So,
it's not
like,
ideal.
I cannot be comfortable. Like,
are you guys window or aisle? You're probably aisle.
Aisle.
Yeah.
John just rolled his eyes.
Yeah, I realized as I was saying.
Sorry,
I know.
He rolled his eyes so hard. Oh, I think God, they briefly departed the space-time continuum.
But like, I'm always excited. It's like being at an airport means I'm excited to be. You know, I'm gonna be somewhere new, and that's always exciting. So,
yeah,
100%. You know, I don't know. I've slept in a lot of airports. Like,
D3 baseball life.
Yeah, baby. It's some hot trash. I can't recommend it to anyone. But I like traveling. I love being new places. I hate getting to new places unless you can
that's
take
a
train.
Trains
are great.
Trains are cool.
But
all right. Shout out to all the trains.
Yeah.
Shout out to traveling.
# trains.
Shout out to the Arkansas Travelers.
Yeah. Ooh, nice.
There
good
we
one.
Go.
Kings of the Texas League.
Yeah.
They're like 30-15 or something crazy.
And yeah. So, thank you for listening. Sorry for the really long break. Like we mentioned, there was some physical circumstances of John not being here.
From us anyway.
And that part where it's like, we kind of took the temperature of the site and of Twitter and realize people have
not
been.
We're not even sure if you're here now.
Yeah, I mean, this was, an hour and 10 minutes in, we would not have faulted you for leaving. But for those of you who are still here, thank you so much.
The real MVPs.
And you will hopefully hear from us soon.
You will definitely hear from us post-draft.
The draft, yeah.
We'll be back next week.
Hopefully with good feelings, why did we draft this guy feelings. Although with baseball, it's so weird because it's going to take like three or four years to even get a full understanding.
But we will be here with our hot take reactions, and I will be here crying my eyes out when we don't draft Jordan Brewer. So,
which will probably happen, it sounds like. Yep. So, for Kate's tears, tune in next week to the Lookout Landing podcast.
Bye. Mother Russia in my cup, and my glass is fogging up. Oh yeah, hey dog, hey, what's up? Oh yeah, hey dog, hey, what's up? Mother Russia in my cup, and my glass.